Hallelujah. Welcome to this week's teaching by Exchange Church Belfast. Our heart at Exchange is for you to experience a genuine encounter with Jesus Christ and to thrive in life. If you want to call by for a Sunday service, we'd love for you to join us at 10:30 a.m. for a wee cuppa, followed by worship from 11. You can also connect with us via our Facebook page, Exchange Church Belfast, our Twitter at Exchange Church, our Vimeo, exchangechurch.tv, and our website, of course, exchangechurchbelfast.com. And it would be great to hear from you. Now, over to this week's talk.
So are we ready to go? Are we all good this morning? Everyone in good form? Yes, ready to receive? Some of you aren't sure. Do it to me, Pastor. All right. It's what we've been talking about is about being centered. It's all online. I can't, as we go through this series, keep going back and saying go, you know, and recapping at the start of every week. But what I'm trying to say to you is that the times that we live in are all about Jesus being in the center. That's why this church matters. We're a church that is all about the grace of God and about the grace of Jesus and his finished work, because that's what the Lord prophesied back even in the Old Testament times. From Genesis 1 through to Revelation 22, the whole story is Jesus. Do you get that? It's not, Jesus doesn't come sort of halfway through for the second bit of the play. It was all about him. And actually what we find is that there are pictures and typology and all sorts of stuff in the Old Testament, which is Jesus concealed, and then he's revealed in the New. But the whole story is about him. And so what the Lord says is this, is if you're looking for success or health or promotion, it will happen whenever Jesus is at the center of your life. And Christians talk about this, and they go, yeah, I want to build, help me, Pastor, to build with Jesus at the center. And it's something that we talk about, but actually we've been unpacking that and going, well, what does it really mean? Because how do you get Jesus into the center so that health and promotion and blessing and favor flow in your life? I said that grace and peace will be multiplied in you whenever Jesus is the very center of who you are. So I said, if you're spending the best years of your life right now building on something else, well, you're nuts. You need to wise up. And it's not too straight. It is. Don't build around anything other than who he is and what he has done for you, because it's not a sure foundation for anything. And the thing is that if you pursue Jesus and you pursue him at the center, these are just recapping big themes from the last number of weeks, then what you are looking for and what you're searching for in life will be added to you. That's what the word says. So you have people who spend the best years of their life looking for health, promotion, security, safety, success, all right? And what the word says is actually if you would just put your focus onto him and who he is, all of that stuff will be added to you way more than what you could do yourself, because that's the heart of a father who loves to bless. Do you get that? But what we do is we have Christians who go, yes, Lord, but in this, I just need to work really hard, and I need to do, and yes, Jesus. And then that's why Paul writes in Ephesians 1, 23, he says, where is the church in this? Because the church is God's vehicle to get the grace of God, the work of Jesus, to the world. It's a place where you come to live in community with people who've experienced the same, and therefore we take the message and we help people to, you know, that's the church. The church matters. The church is not on the edge of God's plan. Do you get that? The church is God's plan with Jesus as the head of the church. Jesus is not the head of something which is completely irrelevant. Jesus is the head of the very vehicle that God has chosen to bring his grace to the world. Do you understand? And so that's why Paul, when he's writing in Ephesians 1, asks us all the question. He says, you see, in the Message version, is the church, you know, the church is not peripheral, is the way that he puts it, on the edge of the world. In fact, the world is on the edge of the church. So then I ask you the question, is the church on the edge of your world, or which way is it? Because actually, it's not a case of that. The spirit of the age is about individualism, and it's about me and mine, and, you know, I call it God TV type Christianity. I don't need the church. Well, actually, the way the Lord has designed this whole thing is that the gathering of God's people with Jesus at the center, because if he never needed the church, there never would have been a tabernacle in the Old Testament, which would have shadowed the church and the people building their lives around it. Do you get that? And that's a challenge, because we all have stuff to work out. Well, work it out, you know, but and don't step yourself out of God's purpose because you can't work out this stuff, all right? That's why grace frees you. Do you get that? Okay, so that's good. So I said last week, could somebody get me some water? Would that be okay? I said last week that one of the amazing things about getting, there you go, just like that, my magic assistant there. One of the amazing things that we've been looking at in the tabernacle with Jesus at the center is the fact that everything points to him. Everything. Remember last week, I said that everything from the way that they built the thing to the ark at the center to the colors that were used, everything points to Jesus. And so they didn't realize it at the time, but the Lord gave very specific instructions as to how they were to set this tabernacle up, okay? And as they set that up, everything showed a detail about who Jesus would be and what he would do. So the point is for us today, when we look at this, we see Jesus, and it tells us another bit of his work for us. It tells us what he has done for us, and it shows us another facet of his love for us. And so the thing is as well, is if you're struggling in your world today to see some proper change, if you're struggling with the same old that you've struggled with for years, what the Bible says actually is if you behold Jesus, if you see him, if you look at him, then you will be changed into the same image from glory to glory, all right? And so the question I've been asking you is, that's why he says, is all of this just at the edge of your life? What are you really beholding? Who sets the agenda? Who sets what you build your choices on? Who decides what you spend your money and your time on? What's the agenda? Is it the eternal purpose of God for his church, or is it just you with Jesus at the edge? And it's not to make you feel bad. It's just to go, everything that you're searching for actually is in Jesus. So just get the order right. Get a big revelation of him, and all this stuff will play out. Does that make sense? That's good, isn't it? So it brings us to, and I said last week, one of the just that whole thing, did anyone go and mix paint this week? Did anyone try it? Go, ah. Did you try it? Oh, okay. So I said last week that one of the things that, because I'm just going to look today at the priest, just a couple of weeks, it's really good, all right? And remember the three colors, blue, scarlet, and purple? And why did God say do this? Because blue is about God, okay? Blue-blooded, it's all about royalty and God. It speaks of God and who he is. Then you have red, Adama in Hebrew, or Adamin, means red-blooded man. And you put red and blue together, what do you get? Purple. Ah, come on, that's a good word, isn't it? You're a hard crowd this morning, all right? Did anyone try to get the red out of purple? You can't do it, can you? So when the Lord changed you, says about a new creation, it was about humanity and Godhead coming together, all right? You see it first in Jesus, but that's what he does, and he makes you royalty. We sang, I am a child of God, all right? He said, and as royalty, what did I say? Royal people are people who are heirs. They don't inherit because of what they have done. It's because of who they are. And the thing is, when he changed you, your sin and your mess, your disasters, your lack of whatever, will never undo what he has done for you. Isn't that good? You try your best this week. Honestly, try your best this week to get red paint out of purple after you've mixed it, and you will never do it, all right? And that's what I was trying to encourage you with. When you settle that and you go, I am safe and I am secure and I am loved because he did the work, then whew, you're able to receive. All right? Isn't that good? So let's have a wee look, because what happened is, now this is, I'm going to again go reasonably simple in this. Because I think you're all quite simple. And that's a joke. All right? He's going to get up and smack me one there. And so, you know, play to your audience and all that. So in this tabernacle, I want you to, this goes to the very heart, actually, of how you live. And what I'm going to talk to you about is how the priest is a picture today. Now, I'm living this more and more, because this relates to how you operate every day with your family, particularly in your work, but how you experience receiving. Because the priest in those days stood before the people, and he represented the people to God. And the priest in the tabernacle is a foreshadow. It's the high priest now. This is the one who goes in to the ark, okay, like I talked about a few weeks ago. Is a foreshadow of Jesus. Do you get that? So let me just put this into your head. So what I'm going to talk about today is going to foreshadow the what's called the second high priest. Because there was a priest. Aaron was the first high priest, okay, back in the day. Jesus is described as the second high priest, not of the same order, but of the order of Melchizedek. I'm not going to go into that because it's way complicated. It's in the book of Hebrews. But basically, Melchizedek, the king of righteousness. So what we see is, and then here's the important thing. as the high priest went in those days, so did the people. Do you get that? That's just what I want you to have in your head, because that's the important bit. I don't want to complicate you with lines and orders and all the rest. But what you need to understand is when you look at the priest, he is a visual representation of as it goes with him, it will go with me. That's why he stood in the tabernacle and offered the sacrifices. Because as the sacrifices were offered, as it went with him, because he did it first, and then the nation were taken care of. Does that make sense? So you've got to get that into your head, because there's some really cool stuff in this. So are we ready to go? So let's have a look. So Aaron's the first high priest. And what happens? I'm going to talk about what do you wear. What is it that you wear that you carry every day? Because there's things, there was very specific instructions. Can you put up the first slide for me there, please? So the very first thing that they wear on their heads, and this is just a quick one. So the Lord gave very specific instructions, and it wasn't to fill in the paperwork because they had a book to fill. When you look at this, you can apply this to your life today, all right? Because the very first thing that the priest had to cover was his head, and he covered it with a linen turban. I'll come on to that in a second. And on the turban, he placed a gold band, and it had the words Kodesh LeYahweh on it, which it's a solid gold band that went around the front, and it simply means holiness unto the Lord. Now, the priest had to wear this at all times, because what happened was when the priest was wearing this, whenever the Lord looked at the priest, what he said was, the gold, what does gold talk about? Divinity, the work of God, all right? So the work of God on the head, on the mind. And as long as the priest was wearing this golden, this turban with the golden band, his thoughts were counted as holy. Do you get that? Now, think about that for you and me. Where do we find the biggest battle going on? In our heads, isn't that right? It's in our minds. Our thoughts condemn us. Our thoughts continually sometimes play on us. We feel a sense of shame sometimes of the things that we think about, don't we? And then when we turn to God, oh, well, you know, nobody can see what I've done on the outside, but see if you knew what was going on in here, then I'm in big trouble. So where does the Lord start with the priest? He says, let me just tell you something. Whenever I look at what I see here, what I say is, it is holy. Now this is, and you go, but my thoughts aren't holy. But what the Lord does is he goes, I count them as holy because of the divine work that rests on them. I will not judge you because of what you think. Oh, isn't that good? That's the root of it, folks. That's where it starts. Because so many of us go, oh, you know, I can't get this right. I can't receive grace, and I'm trying my best. And it's got nothing to do with what's going on the outside. It's all this inner track. We think, is it in my heart or is it in my head? I don't really know. But what I know is this. For me, it all goes around up here. And sometimes I wish I could just get some rest. Does anyone feel like that? Oh, if my head could just rest a while. Yeah. And that's actually where the Lord starts. When he goes, if you're going to stand before me like the priest, because remember, what happens is this. I'm trying to make this not complicated, because this is a slightly complicated bit of the tabernacle. The priest, first priest, we go to the second priest, Jesus. And then we are all now priests before God. Do you get that? So we sit in the order of Jesus, Melchizedek, Jesus, boom. And now we all minister before God, okay? Prophets, priests, and kings. And so what he says to you today is this. I want to tell you something. And if you listen to Jesus here, see, whatever goes on in your head, whatever way you feel condemned, whatever way you can't work it out, whenever the Lord looks at you, he chooses to see holiness. This is so important, because even under the New Testament, you know, when it comes to even the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says, like, if you, you know, look at a woman a certain way, or you, do you know all that sort of stuff? You might not do the act, but your thoughts. How many people have sat under that teaching and gone, oh, seriously, I'm screwed? No? Like, oh, okay, I can just about keep it all together for the most part with what people see, but if you're really going to get into my head, I'm in trouble. Yeah? Now, you know that Jesus, when he was talking there, was talking about, if you really want to live by law, let me just go to the, okay, you really want law? This is what it's going to look like. He was showing not what you had to do, but how impossible it was to do that if you wanted law. All the way back to the very beginning, he had already showed you that when the work of the Messiah would come, he would say, I look at that, and even though you feel something different, I declare it holy. Right? And as the priest goes, so does everybody else. That's good, isn't it? So what that means for me is I do not allow my thoughts to condemn me, as wide and various and diverse as they are at times. I simply say to the Lord, do you know what? I thank you that today you count me as holy. Isn't that good? And if it goes around in my head, so be it. The Lord will deal with me. He'll love me to change. He'll pour into me. But he will not condemn me for what goes on in here. And that's a biggie, isn't it? And that's where we start. I'm going to go pretty quick. I'm going to take this out over 2 weeks. But just if you think about that, Kodesh Lo Yahweh, holiness unto the Lord. That's what it says in Corinthians. You have the mind of Christ. We can go into that. That's it written in Hebrew for you. Kodesh Lo Yahweh. Holiness unto the Lord. You have the mind of Christ. Do not let your thoughts condemn you. Don't let your heart condemn you anymore. Whenever this stuff goes around, just say, Lord, love me to change. Love me into change. Because he's not judging you for what you think. That's a good word. And see, in that inner place, that's where life starts to flow from. But let's go on. What else? Let's just go for what these guys used to wear. I'm just going to pull out a few examples for you. Because if we start with all deeds, good and bad, you see, coming from what you think, you know, then God looks at Jesus to evaluate your thinking. He looks at the perfection of his son, and everything that goes on in there, he just counts it as holy. That's just bonkers. That the Lord chooses that for us. Because if he didn't choose that, we would be guilty under the law. So then what else? This I'm going to go a wee bit slow in this, because this is the bit that nobody sees. There was a bit of the priest that nobody saw, but it was the most important bit, really, of what he wore, because it sat underneath everything else. I want you to draw the picture to your life. Do you get me? The bit of you that nobody else sees, but everything then goes on top. And what it was, the Lord told them to wear what was called a ketoneth. If you can fire back for me, Paul. It was this white set of, it was a fine linen undergarment. Now, this is really good, called a ketonet. Now, this is the same garment that when you read in Revelation about what we will be wearing in the book of Revelation, all the believers, it's called ketonet. Now, if you think about Jesus wore one of these. And whenever he was crucified, remember the soldiers didn't want to tear his garment, so they cast lots for it. It's because it was so expensive and so costly that they didn't want to rip it, okay? Because it was completely seamless. And it was so incredibly expensive that normally only royalty or the very wealthy could afford to wear it. Now, that's what they gambled for. And the reason why they're gambling is let's not tear this up because it's far too valuable. Now, the foundation of everything that the priest wears is the very finest linen. And it's called ketoneth. It's a one big piece. There was actually underwear in it. And then there's a bit that went over the top. Now, it's not the kind of linen that we see today. And it was a very expensive commodity. And only ultra-rich or very wealthy people. Actually, the first time you hear of this, if you want to know how the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation talks about Jesus, the first time ketoneth is mentioned is in Genesis chapter 3, verse 1, when Adam and Eve are cast out. You know the way we have this vision of them when the Lord clothed them? You see it in all the things, and they're sort of like this, you know? Like wee fig leaf things going on. All right? And why did I do that? Sweet Lord above. I have no idea. All right? Awkward. But you know what I mean? You have that picture. Actually, they weren't clothed like that. It says that God made them a ketoneth of animal skin. Now listen to this. And it was all about them resting in his provision, because God sacrifices probably a male ram, right, covered in blood. And so it wasn't a skimpy animal skin. It actually would have covered them from their neck right down to their feet. It was long-sleeved. And so it was fashioned from the hide of the animal that God had used. And actually, if you want to know who offered the first blood sacrifice ever, it was Jesus, or it was God back there. It was a foreshadow, because without the shedding of blood, it says in the word, there won't be any sin taken care of. And so what you have is Adam and Eve, right at the very beginning of their mess, covered from head to foot on a sacrifice that God makes, all right, called ketoneth, right? And it's a foreshadow of the fact that they are going to be that the Messiah will come and look after them. So it's also what we see in this word Ketanath is the same word of Joseph and his coat of many colors. Now, it's interesting because it says that Jacob, his father, gave him a Ketanath. Have you ever thought, why were you told that his brothers got fed up with him? Was it because his dad bought them a coat? Isn't that what we're all taught? Okay? That was part of it. Ketanaths were long-sleeved, all right? Now, Joseph's coat of many colors would have been a long-sleeved coat. People who worked in that climate in the Middle East, okay, they wore short-sleeve stuff underneath because it was so darn hot, okay? Ketanaths, however, were long-sleeved, all right? So whenever Jacob gave his son the coat of many colors, the Ketanath, right, what it meant was the only people who wore them in those days were royalty or the ultra-rich, those who didn't work. So actually, when the brothers saw the coat, what they saw was, here's my father favoring this son and declaring in front of them that you will never have to work for what you get because I will provide it. And that's why the brothers killed him or wanted to kill him. It was so jealous. They were so angry. They were so enraged because it wasn't about the coat. It was about what it symbolized. It symbolized rest and position. Favored above the others because of what he did? No, but because of who he was. And that's where you see. So you see this all over. So let's get back to the temple because it was a really, really hot climate. And so the Lord said, you know what? I want you to live in these. I want you to, the priest, first of all, has got to stand in these. Now, it speaks of purity because they were pure white, absolutely pure white. And what does white mean? We've done this over the weeks. White means righteous, doesn't it? It means totally blameless. And so you have the priest standing, and the thing this is all going to be covered up, all right? But what is closest to him, all right, is this fine linen garment, ultra expensive, of pure white. And it was literally, imagine Aaron and the line of high priests ministering day after day, because they never stopped working. The priests were continually in the temple making sacrifices in the tabernacle, and then the high priest once a year on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, making the big one for the nation. They never stopped, but they didn't realize at that moment of working hard to try to cover up sin that they were actually dressed in righteousness from top to bottom. How much is that like us? How much time do we spend working hard to either cover up our sin, to work for Jesus, but not knowing that actually he has dressed us from head to foot in purity and righteousness, and because you're righteous, all that is his is yours. Do you see that? They didn't see it. They just followed the instructions. They followed what they had to put on, but they didn't understand what they were standing in. Can I ask you, do you understand how he has dressed you? From head to foot, every way, from the top of your head to the soles of your feet, you are totally acceptable to God. But even in our time of being totally acceptable to God, we still try to work. We're trying to work to please him. We're trying to work to get his favor. We're trying to work to cover up our inconsistencies. Sometimes in our head, but he already declares, no, I see that Kadesh Lu Yahweh, holy unto me. But we stand there before the Lord sometimes not even knowing what we're dressed in. Now, why does it matter? Because there's more. Is this okay? Okay, it's helping. So, because it says you stand in purity. So, as Jesus' purity as the second high priest, okay, is given to us. And just as his thoughts are pure, so we get those. And his righteousness is given to us. And just as it was for Jesus, for the high priest, and then to Jesus, so it is for you today. All right? Because as Jesus goes as the high priest, so do you. Do you get that? I've got to tell people, I really, in terms of these robes, right, that the picture I want to get, I want to show you why the Lord said, have a picture of righteousness, but have that underneath everything else. This is why we preach God's grace and God's love to you every week. It's because that has to be the thing that sits at the very center. It's actually the bit that God does in our hearts that nobody sees, but it's from that place that everything flows. You know, not like kind of, you know the kids today who wear their cacks halfway down there, you know, Why did they do that? I don't want to see your pants. Pull your trousers up. You know, kids who like kind of walk along. And I just want to either walk up behind them and go, way, or just wake them up. And go, do you get that? And have to walk. They have to walk like Daffy Duck because they're trying to keep their head. Like, seriously? You youngsters. I don't know. Stick your pants away. Nobody wants to see them. Thus saith the Lord. Amen. Maybe that's just an age thing. All right? But they're it. Anyway, that's just maybe my age. All right? But the thing is, this is what sits underneath. Right? Knowing that you are absolutely acceptable to God is what covers you from the very beginning. All right? It has to be. And there was reasons for it. But I want to ask you the question, how are you doing with that? Because the Lord said, if you're going to stand and minister in front of me, if you want to live for me, if you want to, you know, you're going to stand righteous from the top of your head to the soles of your feet. The picture of people who actually are in relationship with the Lord are those who are completely white. And some of us go, but he's showing you the picture to go, this is what I have done for you. Because as Jesus then does it, as it goes with Jesus, so it goes with you. Now, let's just go. I want to build on this another wee bit more. So you see that these white robes are the same ones, the kenoteth are the same ones that are mentioned in the book of Revelation. And it's the white robe of right. It's how you stand before God. I am not a sinner. I am a saint. I am a son. I am a child. I'm not a slave. As I stand before you, I am completely righteous. Now, here's the point. Why did he say, make them out of linen? What was the whole point? Now, it's a very unique fabric. And what it does is, when it's really, really hot, linen keeps you cool. And when it's the other way around, when it's kind of coolish, it can keep you warm. So it's very practical. You might think, actually, God was just being intensely practical. Now, what it says is, just on that point alone, the reason why the Lord said make it out of the finest linen, the most expensive linen, okay, is what it says is that your righteousness is what you need for whatever your circumstances are. Do you understand that? So when it's cool, the linen kept you warm. When it's warm, the linen would keep you cool, something like that. Isn't that the right way around? Okay, so what it says is, and this is where there's a crisis of confidence in the church, is it enough for me just to receive from the Lord and say, everything that you are, I can build my whole life with you at the center, because no matter what my circumstances are, his righteousness is the right fit. So whether I'm in lack, righteousness is what provides, not my hard work. If I'm sick, his righteousness is what provides, not my trying harder. Do you get that? Whatever the situation, what does he say? Stand dressed in righteousness. Whatever your circumstances are, you are already equipped to deal with them, not because of what you've done, but because he has dressed you that way. His righteousness provides everything. Isn't that cool? But there's more than that. One of the interesting things is that whenever Moses received the instructions for this stuff, there were very explicit instructions. And one of the things that linen has as a unique quality is that it would mean that the priest would never sweat. Right? That's why. If you're wearing linen and working all day, what the Lord said is, I don't want you to sweat. What that means is that righteousness provides rest. Because even though the priest was busy working and ministering to the Lord, there couldn't be any, the Lord didn't want him to sweat. It wouldn't be his work that would provide, it would be the Lord's work that would provide. So when you stand in right, and this is really what I just want to talk about for about 5 or 10 minutes, okay? Is this sense of what is closest to us and where we come from is a place of rest. And we know that we can live at rest and live at peace if we are righteous. Do you get that? And that's why he says, dress like this. He says, in your life, dress in a way that brings about rest. Because when there is rest, then you can receive everything. So the priest was not allowed to sweat it out, so that the priest could turn around and say, look how hard I've worked today. Flip. But actually, as he did what the Lord asked him to do, all the focus was on Jesus. What does that mean in real life? Okay. What it means is this. What I've found in my life, particularly over the last couple of years, I would say is this, is that I have lived so long with a heavy expectation on my shoulders. I'm going to talk about that. I'm using that expression advisedly because I want to talk into it next week. Because what goes on the shoulders of the priest and around to his breast is really incredible. But I don't know what it's like for you with that sense of how provision, my future. If this is hits you, just go, yeah. What's it going to be like 10 years from now? Am I provided for? If I don't really knock my pan in, then I'm not going to see everything that I want to see. Anyone? If I don't, then this won't happen. This conditional way of living, and it's anything other than rest. But what does the Lord say? That he wants you dressed in that everything coming from a place of rest. Right? Because he wants you to understand that it is not the sweat of your brow that brings about forgiveness and righteousness and favor and blessing. It is his work to do it for you. Now, that was a revelation, really, for me. I've heard that for years. But what I started to understand was this, was that the priest kept on working, right? But there was no sweat in it. And so what that tells us is this, is what the Lord wants you to understand and wants me to understand is he wants us to live in a place where, you know, people, I'm not saying that grace makes you lazy. It doesn't. But what it does is it gives you rest in work and not from it. Big difference. What does it really mean to be working and to be using our gifts and our talents in the business world, in church, in ministry, and all the rest of it, to doing what we enjoy and what we love, but to find such rest and peace right in the center of it? You know, in my business, which I do outside of this church, I have found in the last 18 months particularly unbelievable favor. Now, I'm saying this because if he can do it for me, the numpty, he can do it for you, all right? So everyone who's going, thank goodness, he's a numpty, so am I, just listen. Out in Jesus' name. And, right? So what we find is this. For those of you who go, well, what about tomorrow? In my business, what I decided to do was every time I felt pressure. Now, you'll know what this is like, and it's different for everybody. But you know when you think about something and you start to go, right, well, this needs to happen or that, okay? What the Lord showed me in those moments was I was feeling that because I was carrying something which I was never meant to carry. And so my body responded and my mind responded because my thinking was, I am responsible for, all right, the outcome. If I don't really da-da-da, then this will never work. And the Lord really started to speak to Penny and I about what does it truly mean to be dressed. If I'm totally acceptable to God, then I can stand in a place of rest because of Jesus. Okay? This is a picture of Jesus, okay? And as he is, Jesus is at rest. It says today, sitting in the right hand of the Father. I'll finish up with that. But as he is, so am I. Now, what I started to find was that doors started to open that I could never have opened. I'll tell you what happened for the first while. I was working differently, so with other people. And what I found was my heart shifted to going, they're my source and they're providing for me. I'll not get the work unless I do it this way, through them. Did you get that? And the Lord really challenged me to the point where he said, walk away and trust me. And for a number of months, about a month, month and a half, beginning of last year, I had to make a decision to go, that has provided, but I have to walk away because I was not resting in it. I was looking to this person to provide. I was getting frustrated because it wasn't working out. I was feeling this continual tension, and the Lord said, stop, walk away. I went, okay. You sure? Jesus, yeah, I'm kind of. Maybe you meant the other guy, because you couldn't be talking about me, because I'm screwed if I walk away. I don't know how it's going to work out. Where am I going to get the business from? How's that going to, you get me? And so I did that. And what went through my head and my heart was a mixture of, oh my goodness, you must be flipping choking. We're doomed, we're all doomed to, you don't want to hear that from your pastor, do you? Okay, well, I'm just being honest, all right? No, actually, I got up every morning on a cloud of glory. The angels singing around the bed. Washed a few poor, dirty people in the street on my way to... I ended up going, oh, crap, what are we going to do? And then, honestly, I still kept developing myself and doing what I do. And then, Andrew, could you come in and have a word with us about this problem that we're having? Yeah, no problem. What about this one? And what about this one? It didn't all happen overnight. Over a period of months, all of a sudden, I find myself now in a position where I have more work than what I can do, at more money. I'm going to say 50% more than what I was earning when I was sweating it. 50% every day more than what happened in the past, and more than I can physically handle. Now, here's what's interesting. It's that, you know that thing of when the Lord starts to bless and multiply, the nets don't break? Actually, now it's like I find myself in a place where, you know, we have to handle blessing and handle favor because God's been so good. But where did it start? He said to me this: when you remove the burden of the outcome, you remove the burden off of your shoulders and you really rest, okay, then I will bless and multiply way beyond anything you could ever have produced yourself. But the thing is, because there's no sweat with it, all right, it's not about how good you are. I chuckled to myself. I had an interesting time this week with one of my clients, and it was good, it was interesting, it was positive, interesting. But I came away chuckling to myself, going, seriously? There's a wee bit of like imposter syndrome where you think, if they ever find out that I'm a duffer, I'm in trouble, right? Do you get that? You ever have that? If I could be found out here, and then you kind of go, wise up. But you have that sense of going, actually, this is such the favor of God that there is no way that I could ever turn around and say it was me, because clearly it's not. Adding and blessing and multiplying. But what I understand for us in our journey has been because we're dressed in righteousness. What the Lord brought us in terms of our business was not because I'm smart or clever. I work really hard at it, don't get me wrong, okay? Put in the hours and do that. But it doesn't feel like I'm sweating and sweating and sweating. It feels like, God, you're so funny. An email comes in, a phone call comes in, what about this? Could you do that? We'd love you to look at this. And you're going, I've never even talked to you before. How did you even hear of me? But that's the picture of blessing and favor. But do you know where it starts? I only believe the Lord has done that as the Lord did that in us. And it's my testimony. If he does it with me, he'll do it with you. When we started to truly go, I'm not looking to the outcome like the priest. I'm going to stand in righteousness alone with Jesus at the center and let me behold him and he will do the rest. So I stopped worrying about whether I'd get the business. I stopped worrying about whether the money would be there. I stopped worrying about reputation. And all of a sudden the Lord just started to boom, boom, boom. Why? Because it wasn't me at the center, it was Jesus standing right. And so there was rest. Does that make sense? So this picture of underneath everything that the priest does is everything points to resting in righteousness. Everything points to you this week as he ministered before the Lord. And the picture is not what you do in church or ministry, although that's helpful. It's what you do in life. Whenever you get up in the morning, what are you dressed in? All right, because let me just read one wee bit and then I'm done. It said that God, it shows you the compelling reason why he chooses linen. It's in Ezekiel 44. It's curious. It says, when they, the priests, come through the gates of the inner open space, talking about the temple and the tabernacle, they'll be dressed in linen clothing. They must not wear wool while they are serving inside the gates of the inner space or the house. They will wear linen head coverings and linen underclothes. So why did he say they must not wear wool? Because they cannot wear anything that would cause them to sweat. It's not so good to go, the Lord doesn't want you stressed out, worried, or anxious. He wants you to stand there, look at the ark, and go, thank you. Jesus, you're incredible. And I might be doing all this stuff, but I'm finding so much rest and I'm not even sweating. Isn't that good? I'm praying that this happens at the marathon tomorrow. Seriously? I had this thought of going, I wonder if that works when you're a bit of a fat boy and you've got to run miles. You'll find out next week. If I'm here, if the Lord spares me, and all that sort of stuff. So can I just say God is really concerned about this? See, can I just tell you, it shows you something about the Lord there, right? It shows you that not just an instruction, but he's really concerned that you don't carry the burden on your shoulders. He's really concerned about that. He doesn't want that for you. He wants you to see Jesus as your priest, and as it went for him, so it goes for you. So what that means is we can come to the Lord and go, let me just turn my eyes to Jesus and see him. Last thing is this. I just want to say that whenever, you know, you can appear to be outwardly kind of cool, calm, and collected, while inside your emotions are churning and your mind's racing, your heart's pounding, your, you know, worry and fear. Sweat basically represents your human effort, your human work, your human reasoning, your human striving, your human worrying. And God, first and foremost, says, no, the bit that's underneath everything else that I will build on is righteousness, which leads to rest. Because the more you rest, the more he does. And you have this man standing dressed like this, as this screaming picture of what's underneath everything else that the Lord does is rest. Not good. Now, just to finish, when we look at Jesus, it says that whenever he, you know, remember the first Adam, okay? It says that he would work. Whenever curse came, you see, sweat and work was part of the curse. So Adam was told that he would be, that would be his lot. But that happens in the first garden. You see, Jesus in the second garden, Gethsemane, all right? And what happens is that he sweats blood, okay? And he sweats blood and it falls to the ground. And as Jesus sweats blood, okay, the blood redeems, it's about redeeming work through blood. So when the first Adam sweated into the ground and he was told that he would work by toil and sweating, in the first garden, in the second garden, Jesus sweats blood, right? It falls into the ground and it redeems all your work. Isn't that good? So the curse is broken. The curse of striving, human effort, reasoning, the curse of burden and producing, the curse of all of that weight of responsibility is removed from you, and you're given rest instead. Isn't that awesome? Honestly, I think that this is one of the biggest areas for me that has so built my faith over the last couple of years, is going, Lord, honestly, I want to see this more and more in my life and seeing how the Lord has done it. And that was Marcel, Pastor Marcel in Holland, who spoke that word into our lives, and I'm really grateful that he did. Lord doesn't want you to be worried or afraid. He wants you to rest and not sweat, to trust him and to be at rest. And that's that beautiful picture of Jesus for us today. So can I just encourage you, I'm going to build on that for next week, but underpinning everything else, because we're going to look at other things that the priest wore just for a week. It's really good. But I want you to go away from here today and go, what areas of my life do I actually feel it? When I think about it, it could be not just my work, but it's any area, relationships, bosses, mental health. Whenever I feel stress, all it tells us is I'm now carrying something and I'm not at rest. But I stand, the priest stood before God. So just turn your head to go, I'm standing before God, completely okay to him. Even the thoughts that condemn me, he sees as holy. And let just your heart stay in that place, okay? And trust in that place, that as you keep Jesus at the center, that way righteousness is his work. You keep your mind and your heart on that. And actually for me, it meant me going, I don't know what's it like next month, but I'm not worrying about it. I'm choosing to go, you've got that covered. And seeing in the blessing of God overtaking us and saying, I stand righteous and restful. Amen.